Hello everybody, we're live and broadcasting for this In Mind, In Body Google Hangout on Air. And we've got a very special guest today. We've got Dr. David Hamilton. Now I know that Tessa is very excited about having David on this Hangout. Do you want to just tell us quickly why you're so excited, Tessa?
David's amazing. I just absolutely love his work on the mind and the body, and how they work together. And I've used a lot of his work, a lot of his research that he's put together, especially this book of his about the power of visualization to help create in mind and body. And I have to tell David that about half an hour ago, I've been outside doing my power pose in preparation for talking to him, because he's just so awesome, and I can't believe it's just little old me sat here talking to David. So I'm over the moon.
David, she sounds a little bit starstruck here.
You're totally making me smile here, Tessa. It's really nice to get a chance to chat with you here. Actually, I've been really looking forward to this.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking part in this. We are both delighted that you've joined us. Where exactly are you right now?
I'm in a little village called Sauchie in central Scotland. I'm staying with my in-laws. We're in between houses right now.
You're staying with your in-laws. What a brave man.
Yeah. You know, it's great having home-cooked meals.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Now, could you just tell us a little bit, David, about your career and what it is that you do?
Sure. I'm currently a writer and public speaker. You know, I give talks and workshops around all different aspects of the mind, really. It's because I used to work as a scientist with one of the world's biggest pharmaceutical companies. I have a PhD in organic chemistry, and basically what that qualifies you to do is work in a pharmaceutical company where you stick atoms together. It's a bit like Lego. You know, you can take Lego bricks of different colours and shapes and sizes, and you can build something. Well, in a sense, an organic chemist is someone who plays Lego with atoms. So we construct molecules which eventually become the drugs that people take when they're sick. But what really interested me more than that, I mean, I loved the science, I loved the chemistry, but what really captured me, my interest, was when you're proving a drug works and you have to give it to people, you have these medical trials, clinical trials, and say, for example, my main fields were cardiovascular disease and cancer. So say, for example, you have a cardiovascular drug and you give it to 100 patients to prove that it works, and let's say you get 80 people out of the 100 making an improvement. So you're celebrating, thinking, well, this is really great, fantastic, 80 out of the 100 have made some measurable improvement. But to prove the drug works, you've got to compare it against a placebo, which is made of sugar or blackboard chalk. And what amazed me is, if 80 out of the 100 improved on the drug, it wasn't uncommon to have, you know, 50, 60, 70, sometimes almost as many on the actual drug, who would improve on the placebo. And I found that just so incredibly interesting, so that, you know, I eventually resigned from the job so that I could look into this further, so that I could actually help other people to understand that there's far more that you can do than you think.
That's incredible, because we've spoken so many times on these, haven't we, Tessa, about the placebo effect?
Yeah, placebo and, you know, the power of suggestibility. It's incredible, and we just totally underestimate it the whole time.
Right.
But that's, you know, I, as you both know, created in mind and body from my cancer experience, but it was understanding the impact that our thoughts have on our health and our well-being, and it was joining that with physical activity. As a personal fitness trainer, I love exercise, and combining the two and using visualization to help people when they can't exercise. Obviously, it's not just going to help people with cancer, but there's a wide field of different people that can listen to our MP3s. But it is incredibly powerful, and it gives somebody back a form of sense of, not control, but of empowering them to their own treatment and their own well-being. And I just want to get across to people how incredibly powerful this is. And this, it's a tool that we can all use. It's not, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what gender you are, it doesn't matter where you live, anything. We all have this innate ability, but we need to be able to use it to our benefit, not to our detriment.
Right, okay. Absolutely. Now, David, so how long have you been doing this work? How long has it been since you left the pharmaceutical company?
It's been about 15 and a half years now, actually.
Right, so you must have found quite a lot in that time. Perhaps you could share some experiences with us.
Nowadays that I've written 8 books,
right,
and all of my books have references. So just to put into context, just how much work and research there has been done out there. On average, my books have anything between 100 and 250 pieces of reference scientific research. So multiply that by 8, and you've got a lot of really good quality pieces of research out there that show people really how incredible the mind is, and you know how much. I've written not only just how your mind affects your body, but how you impact other people just through your attitudes and behaviour. So there's so much research out there that you know. I love sharing it with people because when you start to realise, I mean, for example, one of my favourites of really clever placebo research had, you know, if you give someone morphine for pain and you take an MRI scan of the brain, well, what you will see is patterns in the brain where the morphine is acting. But if you give someone a placebo and really convince them, which you can do in placebo trials, there's ways that you can really build up the power of the placebo just so that you can see what you're studying. And if you give someone a placebo but really convince them it's morphine and take a scan of the brain, it's identical and you can't really tell the difference between who's on the morphine and who's on the placebo.
That's incredible, isn't it?
And if you do the same thing with Parkinson's disease, you can give someone an anti-Parkinson's injection and you can see the brain has produced dopamine in a little area called the striatum. That's usually deficient in dopamine in Parkinson's patients. So you give them the injection and the brain produces dopamine in the striatum. But if you give someone a placebo, but really convince them, really, really convince them that it's an actual anti-Parkinson's injection, amazingly, the brain also produces dopamine in the striatum. And it's incredible because here people, the brain has produced dopamine in that area of the brain because that's what the person was expecting. The person is expecting to move. They believe they're going to be able to move. So the brain produces the chemistry it needs to produce to give them what they're expecting to happen, i.e. move. But note that the brain isn't producing its own natural versions of morphine, which is what it produces on the morphine trial. It only produces dopamine because that's what the person expects to happen, they expect to move. The people that got the placebo for pain thinking it's morphine, the brain has produced natural versions of morphine, but it's not produced dopamine because the person's only expecting a relief of pain. So the brain produces its chemistry to give them a release of pain. But it doesn't produce chemistry to let them move more because that's not what they're expecting to do. So what's happening is your belief itself is so specific that what you think about actually causes your brain to produce the chemistry it needs to produce to give you what you're expecting to happen. And I think that's amazing.
It is amazing. That's incredible. Actually, that's a miracle.
It's astonishing.
What would you say to that, Tessa?
It's absolutely astounding. And you know, this is the message that we've got to get across to people, how powerful their thoughts are. I know when I've said to people, David, that the purpose of the MP3s in some of them is to help build muscle mass, yeah. And people go, you can't do that purely through thought. And I'm sitting there going, oh yes, you can. But people just, you know, I know in your quantum field healing, There's a little bit that you talk about imagining yourself going to the gym and that it's scientifically proven. But people still don't believe this.
I know. There's evidence there. Yeah, I mean, there's so much research in that. In fact, one of my favourite pieces had volunteers asked to do this with their little finger. So they were to flex their little finger and they were to do it for 15 minutes, Monday to Friday for 3 months, right? Sounds kind of boring. But so every day they would come in, they would sit in a chair, they would do that, flex their little finger, their pinky finger. Now, after the 3 month period of doing this exercise every day, they had their strength tested, right? They, by putting their fingers in a wee machine, they lift a wee set of weights that detects how strong they are. So across all the volunteers, after the 3 months, the average improvement in strength was 53%. Now, that's fair enough because you are doing exercise. But a separate group of people, instead of moving their finger, they had to just visualize moving the finger. So they just imagined as well as they could the act of visual of moving the finger. So in their mind's eye, they're going. And they're just imagining moving the finger. But again, they had their strength. So they're doing this every day in their imagination, again, Monday to Friday for the 3 months. They had their strength tested at the start and at the end, and amazingly, the average improvement in strength was 35%, and they hadn't even lifted a finger. So here you have a 35% increase in strength, and you haven't actually moved. But now, skeptics have said to me, ah, but it's not 53% like the people moving. But no, it's not zero either. Here you have a 35% increase in strength and you haven't actually lifted a finger. So I often joke, if you really couldn't be bothered going to the gym, you could actually lie in your bed and pretend you're on the cross trainer.
Well, actually, that's in fact the big benefit of Tessa's MP3s, isn't it, Tessa?
Well, it is repetition, though. You know, it's like if you go to the gym once, you don't feel the benefits. You do have to keep doing. You have to put the same amount of time in, but of course our MP3s are there, you know, for people who can't exercise, who, you know, aren't the opportunity of lying in a bed or in a chair, and it's, you know, to help them, to give them hope and belief upon their journey. But I know, David, is when with the exercise of the little finger, did they just list? They just imagine it themselves. There was no voice because obviously our MP3s, somebody is listening to somebody else's voice giving them the instructions. So do you think listening to somebody else's voice though could be more powerful than just hearing yourself? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people it probably does because a lot of people find it difficult to, you know, to do a visualization, to do it on their own. So I come across a lot of people who like to have a little bit of guidance in the background. So if someone's talking them through it, as long as they're doing the visualization, they're doing the imagination, having someone guide you through it is very beneficial. I mean, it's one of the strengths of people. I've got friends who are hypnotherapists, and it's one of the strengths of having someone there who's guiding you through something that for most people is easier and better and more comfortable than having to do it on their own. Plus, having to do it on your own is a bit of an effort for some people, and so a lot of people do prefer that bit of guidance.
Well, I think I know a lot of people say that they can't visualise, and of course their minds wander off in different places, which I always say is absolutely fine. But we, you know, we bring them back into the visualisation so that they don't need to worry about disappearing, but coming back into it to make it more powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the context of... Sorry, go ahead.
There's also evidence to show that what you imagine, so whether you're imagining lifting a 3 kilo or a 10 kilo weight, you can get the corresponding improvement. And again, people go, oh, no, this surely can't be possible. But... Absolutely. Show otherwise?
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, I'll give you an example. I used to be an athletics coach. When I was a scientist, I in the evenings I coached for a big athletics club. I was a team manager, an under 20 men's team manager, so a kind of youth team manager. But I was also a coach for long jump, triple jump, and I you know enjoyed doing that. But when I left the pharmaceutical industry, I had to leave that behind. But a few years later, when I was writing my first book, I took a job as a lecturer, and I taught chemistry in a college just outside Glasgow in Scotland. And one of the I started talking, I was giving examples of things in the class, and you know sometimes to break up the class, I would talk about something completely different. It keeps people's attention. I would often talk about the mind in the middle of a chemistry class, and it really helped, actually. And I mentioned that I used to be an athletics coach. So this young lad who was a sprinter, an amateur sprinter, came up at the end and he asked if I could help him, if I could give him some tips. So I started teaching him visualization. And his performance improved so incredibly much. I mean, in one season, he not almost 1 second off his 100-meter time. He was a 100-meter sprinter. An incredible improvement. But then the following season, he got an injury. It was a tear in his shoulder, and he had to get an operation. And the consultant said, you know, this is you. You're out of training for 3 months. There's nothing we can do. And he was distraught. He said, this is me just when I'm getting to the point. I'm almost about to be picked for Scotland, for my first race for Scotland. I can't believe this happened. He said, what can I do? I said, okay, after the operation, we're going to do some visualization for rehabilitation. And I said, you can actually, even though you're not on the track training, you can do it in your mind. So after he finished the operation, a week or so later, I said, okay, let's do 3 or 4 gym sessions a week in your mind. So you can't use your shoulder much, so much, so let's just do it in your mind. So he was actually doing like half-hour sessions in his mind. But then he started to become, he was realizing that it was helping him so much that, you know, he was doing these imagination stretching exercises, but then he was starting to lift weights. And he said it got to the point, after about doing this for about a month, in his imagination, he was now lifting more than his PB. PB in athletics is your personal best.
Yeah.
So I think his best bench press was like 100 kilos. But in his imagination, he was actually feeling the weight of 120. And in his imagination, he was imagining lifting 120. He could feel the strain, feel the pressure. And he was, and amazingly, instead of being out of training for 3 months, he was actually only out of training for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And when he came back to training, what astonished his coach and everyone else is he'd hardly lost any strength, he'd hardly lost any speed. In fact, within just 2 or 3 weeks after that, he did actually get his first international race for the Scottish team. And he was actually as fast as he'd ever been. And I think it was because he was actually, in his imagination, he was starting to lift heavier weights in his mind than what he previously thought he could do.
And using his imagination, do you know to what depth he went in that visualization? Did he use all the senses? And are there key components to a visualization that somebody ought to put in order to have a greater achievement?
You know, I think everyone's different, to be honest. And I often use the term imagine rather than visualize. And the reason I do that is because a lot of people have this automatic thought, oh, I can't visualize. But I think the word imagine, to most people, is easier to do. It doesn't sound like visualize. It sounds softer. It sounds, well, I can imagine. And I think we all imagine in our own way. So I often suggest to people who say, I can't visualize, I say, okay, just imagine. And it's funny how that changes
the
word.
I can see that.
Well, I know in the States, I've contacted a lovely lady called Dr. Sandy Jost, she would describe herself as an imagery expert. And she was very, very helpful when I started in Mind and Body, giving me research evidence to support what I was thinking. Everybody in England and the charities, cancer charities in the UK were going, show us the proof that this works, Tess. And she was able to do that. But I literally use the term visualization because the concept is so widely accepted in the sporting world.
Absolutely.
But I thought, well, if you can do it in sport, it works in healing. You know, the two have got to work. So,
I use the word visualization most of the time. I only use that imagine when some people say to me, I can't visualize. But I use the term visualization most of the time because it is such a widespread. And I think it has power. The term has power as well. You know, it's like an active thing that you're doing. But in terms of, you know,
sorry, David, what I'm trying to do now is give people belief that these things can help them.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it's the belief, isn't it? That's what is absolute key to all of this.
Well, I have a question on that, Tessa, for David. I mean, if you were one of Tessa's prospective, let's say, members of the Mind In Body Club. And they were a little bit skeptical. You mentioned the skeptics earlier. What would you say to that person to convince them that this is a good thing?
Yeah, well, what I usually do, Paul, the reason why I cover so much science, let's say I'm giving a talk, and towards the end of the talk, I'm going to share with people some visualization strategies. Right, so I've had conversations with hundreds of people who have used visualization in, to some degree, in recovery from cancer, you know, heart conditions, arthritis, muscle strength, you name it. But rather than just coming in at the start and saying this is the type of visualizations people do, what I do is I spend a good bit of time explaining the science of the mind-body connection. Because when they understand that your thoughts themselves carry power, then it starts to give people a little bit of hope, a little bit of faith. For example, here's an example that I often use. Thoughts of love, empathy, compassion, feelings of connectedness with another person produce the hormone oxytocin, right? Oxytocin, one of the things that oxytocin does is it changes the shape of your blood vessels, right? Oxytocin, it has landing sites, or they're called receptors, on the lining of your blood vessels, the arteries. And what happens is they actually cause the production of a little chemical called nitric oxide. And the long and short of the process is a blood vessel will actually go from that to that. It will expand. And when that happens, blood pressure drops. But here what's happening here. This is you thinking, feeling, love, compassion, connection, bonding. And this is something in your heart and mind. But yet that is having a physical effect on your blood vessels, which is correspondingly reducing blood pressure. So I use that type of thing as an example that you cannot actually disentangle your mind from your body. Every thought that you have, to some degree, produces chemistry. If someone ever doubts this, just ask them what happens in your body when you have in your mind a sexual fantasy. You know, it's males that tend to be skeptical, but it's very obvious what happens to a male when they're imagining a sexual fantasy. So here you have a series of biological changes taking place in the body, i.e. biology is responding to the mind. It happens all the time. We just don't really think about it in that kind of way.
It's a brilliant way of putting it, yeah.
So what I do is I lay down the science from the placebo effect, even how attitude, even how having a certain type of attitude, processing events in a positive way, optimistic way, actually helps you get over a cold faster, for example, because of the way it affects your immune system. I use examples of meditation, because a simple form of meditation, for example, is breathing on purpose. You bring your attention to the sound of your breath, and what that actually does is it causes physical structural changes in the brain, particularly at this part above your eyes called the prefrontal cortex. Now, it's the mind that's doing this, because everyone breathes and that doesn't happen. But if you put your mind on your breath, then this begins to happen. You've caused physical changes to the front of the brain. So I use all these as examples, and also visualization examples, where researchers, neuroscientists show that visualization has an effect on actual brain structure itself. So once I think you put enough science in there, people really start to believe that, damn it, you know, this stuff, my mind is much more powerful than everyone's been telling me. If I can do this with my mind, what else am I capable of doing?
Yeah, absolutely. What a great way of putting it.
David, Tessa. People are so keen to take drugs as opposed to use their minds.
Yeah.
Do you think that's because it's a quick fix, or they think it's a quick fix? Because, you know, certainly with cancer, there's no point just trying to heal the side effects of cancer or the effects of cancer. It is about going in and finding out, you know, what is the root cause of that. And, I'm sure it's a sort of a lack of self-love, and, you know, there's some emotion attached to the disease. But we tend as a society not to look at that and just think, oh, we're going to fix it with drugs. But of course, it's a short fix, isn't it?
Yeah, I very much like the I guess an integrative approach where we take the best advice from everywhere. I think years ago we just always assumed that as soon as you're sick you take a drug and that's it. And I'm not knocking drugs, of course, you know, because they're very, very powerful, absolutely. But instead of just taking drugs, I think we're now understanding that as well as taking a medication, what's also healthy is to eat better. Because in a sense, the food that we put into our body is medicine. Because food changes the environment of the body. And the environment of the body is what determines whether a gene is going to be active or deactivated. In general, you know, lots of genes that switch on and off like Christmas tree lights. The environment in the body influences whether many of these genes are switched on or whether they're switched off. So that's affected by the foods we eat. We also now understand that you add to the health equation not just medicine and food, but you also add exercise. So we're now adding to the health equation medicine, food, exercise. We're now also adding sleep well. We're now also adding manage your stress. And what I'm suggesting we do as well is add in your mind, your attitude of mind, and some little tricks that you're using with your mind, which I think you're doing such a wonderful job with, Tessa, in helping people with that, because when you start to realize that your mind is having such a big effect on all the rest of the stuff, you realize that that's always something that I'm in control of. It's always something. I mean, I always advocate to people, you don't use your mind instead of taking all medical advice, but why don't put them together? You know, why don't you take the best of everything, but always use it, always understanding that your mind is a very powerful tool that you have. So let's learn how we can best use the mind in concert with all these other healthy things that we're actually doing.
Yeah. And I know, you know, from my own personal point of view, before I had cancer, I didn't really believe in any of this, actually. And I wasn't against alternative treatments at all, but I always felt that they were for somebody else. They just weren't for me. Mm. And it wasn't really until I hit absolute rock bottom and I was looking at the impact of stress, emotional stress and all sorts of things, and I thought it was that light bulb moment. You know, if I want to make a difference and change my life, I had to change my thinking. And yeah. I had to believe in myself. I had to believe, I mean, I visualized myself running again. I visualized my healthy body. I visualized actually creating a mind and body, but not as it is at the moment. But I suddenly realized the impact of my negative thinking. I was very much came from a, I can't do things, and I would give you 101 reasons why I couldn't. And that might have been past beliefs or past experiences or something to do with my childhood. And once I got it, you know, it's so powerful. Change your thinking. And I know it's not easy to change your thinking at that time. But what I'm hoping to do with the mind and body is give people a tool that they can use to help get them into a better space.
Absolutely.
And it is our thoughts, and especially, you know, done your research with your research into cancer drugs. You know, getting a cancer diagnosis, obviously the immune system is already stressed, and then just having a diagnosis compiles that stress.
Absolutely. And
it's finding ways to help people turn their thinking round and have belief in what they can do.
Absolutely. You know, I've had a few times a year I give talks or workshops in cancer centres, and I remember having a conversation with an oncologist who came along to a workshop that I was running, because I was teaching all the science of the mind-body connection and then visualisation strategies that are very useful that people have used to help them. And I remember the oncologist came up to me and he said, that was absolutely wonderful. I mean, I really enjoyed that. I've been out of the academic environment for so long. I've been doing my job as a doctor, as a consultant for a long time, and you're used to just treating people in a particular way. But he said, it's so good to learn that there is so much research into attitude of mind and ways of thinking that can have health-giving effects. Even the act of meditation. In fact, a recent study on women who'd survived breast cancer compared those practicing meditation versus those getting standard care. And scientists actually measured the telomeres, which are the little end caps on DNA. It's a bit like, they're a bit like the plastic caps on a shoelace. You know, when a shoelace, when the plastic cap gets worn down, the shoelace unravels and then it's pretty much done. Similarly with the cells, once that the telomere grinds down, which it does at a fairly predictable rate as we age, then what happens is the cell is pretty much done, so to speak, to use the same language. But what this study found, 3 months worth of regular practice of meditation, this is women who survived breast cancer, the telomeres had shrunk way down in the women who got standard care, but they hadn't changed at all. They hadn't shrunk at all in the women who were given meditation, which is just literally using your mind to focus on the sound of your breath. And we were talking about this kind of stuff, that for this oncologist, this consultant was so amazing, they hadn't heard of all this kind of stuff before. And he said he's consistently noticed in his own practices that attitude of mind plays an enormous role. And I often cite evidence, you know, if people doubt that the mind even does have an effect, I think in some cases, and I don't know how many for sure, but in some cases, going into the root cause, like you said, Tessa, has an enormous effect. For that, for many people, they will say, that's what turned it around for me. Going into what I understood, my own emotional patterns, the way I deal with things, the way I feel in this relationship. And I often cite examples, you know, there's a relationship, for example, between a personality type and cardiovascular disease. In fact, type A personality in psychology is hostile, aggressive. So for males, it's dominant bullying. It's bullying and domineering. But yet, they have the highest incidences of hardening of the arteries. And so what you're seeing is mind and emotions, way of interacting, is having an effect on a disease process. There's other research, and it's not conclusive by any means, but it's certainly pointing in a direction that type E, type C personality, for some people, which loosely means cooperative, unassertive, but suppressing negative emotion. One piece of research correlated that with the thickness of some people's tumours. As I say, it's by no means an absolute, and it doesn't mean if someone has a particular cancer, it's anything to do with their own fault. It was just an observation that was made several years ago by, I think the psychologist's name is James Gross, that there was a seeming connection in some cases. Now, the empowering aspect of that is if we can sometimes, for some people, if they can look inside and say, could there be something in how I'm feeling in my life? In the nature of how I'm feeling about my life, my relationships, you know, even how I'm thinking in general, could there be something I could make a positive change in? And if so, could that then have an effect on my health? And if that is the case, then that can only be a good thing. And maybe looking, as Tessa said, looking for the root cause sometimes. Because I would hazard a guess that for a whole range of different illnesses, if we do look at maybe there's more to it than just an accident or maybe something about how I feel, if I could work on that and change that, maybe it could have an effect. And as I say, I don't know how many people this affects, or how many people this actually relates to, because there's not any meaningful data on it. But it's enough of an observation that a number of people I've met over the years have noticed in themselves, and when they've said, you know, if I looked inside myself and yes, I'm having difficulties in this relationship, I do feel like I'm not expressing my authenticity, or I'm being suppressed. And once I started doing that and standing up for myself, it's funny, but my symptoms seem to reduce, or I found another way to deal with this cancer that I didn't seem to notice before. Maybe it's because I'm more empowered now than I was before. So I think there is so much in attitude of mind that's previously unresearched and untapped that I think you're doing a great job with, Tess, in bringing people's awareness to this, that maybe, yeah, there is more that we can do, there's more power that we have inside ourselves than we would ordinarily think. I think you give people hope.
Thank you. That's great, David. That's absolutely wonderful, because, that's what we're trying to do, give people hope.
I've got to say that, you know, as a lay person listening to you two talk here, I mean, this has been, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the most useful broadcast we've done, wouldn't you say, Tessa? The just listening to the science behind it is absolutely fascinating. And I think we could probably talk all day about this.
Well, I hope, I'm sure, you know, David will give people the belief because, you know, he just...
He's convinced me.
You know, all the research is there. And, you know, visualization, it's we're not suggesting for one moment that it's an alternative, but it's a very, very powerful tool that you can use in conjunction with your treatment. And whether it's cancer, whether it's recovering from a stroke, or any form of surgery. There was that recent research, David, in Ohio, about plastered, I can't remember off the top of my head, the broken arms. Is that right, David? And then those they visualized using the muscles while they were unable to.
Oh, I've heard about this. I don't know the details of the research. I just heard about this recently, actually.
Yeah, there was less muscle wastage.
That's what it was.
Those who visualized than those who did nothing. And, you know, there's just so much out there.
It's like, you know, there's research on people who've had a stroke or even spinal cord injury, but to focus on the stroke for now, a typical study that uses visualization might have a group of patients who've had a stroke, and it's not just recent stroke, some of the studies have up to 15 years or 14, 15 years ago. And each person is given maybe a 6-week course in physiotherapy or physical therapy, as it's referred to sometimes in some nations. So they get a 6-week course of physical therapy. Now, in addition to that, one group of them, so half of the patients, and as well as everyone gets a physical therapy, but half of them get an extra maybe half an hour or an hour a day, maybe 3 or 4 times a week, where they're doing visualization. And just like the study you're referring to there with the people who've had a broken arm, they're invited to imagine moving their impaired limb. So for it, let's say a person had impairment to the right side, so they would be imagining moving their right arm. Imagine perhaps turning the pages of a book, imagining drinking from a cup or even eating from an apple. But like you said earlier, Tess, it's a repetition of these movements. And amazingly, what you see in these studies time after time after time is when you examine everyone after the 6 weeks, those who'd done the visualization as well as the physiotherapy recover much more and much faster than those who just have the physiotherapy on its own. You know, it's related to many other studies, like you said, of less muscle wastage. The mind is always exerting a substantial effect on the body. We just, because we've just never heard of this kind of thing in the past, it's difficult at first for people to believe, really, surely that can't possibly be true. But the fact is, it is possibly true.
Well, actually, when I first met Paul, when did I meet you? Sometime last year. Yes. And I was telling Paul what a mind and body was about. And you weren't sure about it, were you, Paul?
Not really. I mean, I think I've always considered myself quite a strong-minded person, and actually, I think what it is, Tessa, is that I was already doing this, but just not knowing that I was doing it.
We all.
I often find myself imagining, you know, my one of my other brothers, not Jonathan, the one that had cancer, but my other brother, Carl, he's always said it, you know, if you imagine something enough, it will become true. And actually, do you know what? I've imagined success in social media for years, and I only dawned on me a few weeks ago that actually I'm living that dream right now.
Brilliant.
That success in social media, I'm living that now. And actually, I link that to this whole concept of visualization, and I put the two and two together. So, yeah, I didn't fully get it, to be honest with you, but I do now. And actually, David, you've just helped me understand it even more by putting some science to it. So that's why I think this broadcast has been so useful.
Yeah, that's been great.
Now, David. What I'm going to do is I think we ought to wrap it up now. Because actually, Tessa and I are just about to do another one of these at 2 o'clock, I think that we're about an hour now. David, thank you so much for taking part in this. It's been fascinating, and I would like to hope to persuade you to come and do another one of these with us in the future.
I'm very happy to do that.
because I think that people will definitely be able to relate to what you've been saying in the last hour, wouldn't you say, Tessa?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, definitely. I'm very happy to do another one. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I've really enjoyed this conversation.
And it's great, this technology, that, you know, you're in Scotland, I'm in Surrey, Tessa's in Buckinghamshire, I think, right now, aren't you, Tessa?
Nearly. I'm in Crowthorne at the moment.
Oh, you're in Crowthorne, right. But, you know, this technology allows us to do these things so easily. There's no reason why we shouldn't exploit it, really, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, both of you, thank you so much for taking part in this In Mind In Body Google Hangout on Air. To find out more about In Mind In Body, you can visit the In Mind In Body website at www.inmindinbody.com. You can follow Tessa Guy on Twitter at GuyTessa. You can see that in Tessa's lower third there. And I would encourage people to also check out Dr. David Hamilton's website at www.drdavidhamilton.com. And also, I'm sure, David, you won't mind engaging with people on Twitter if they have any questions. Yeah,
I do. Be great. I often do that. Yeah.
Fantastic. And your Twitter is at Dr. D.R. Hamilton. Is that right?
Yeah, Dr. Hamilton. It's because my initials are David Robert. So it's Dr. Hamilton.
I thought that was because you're just a double clever doctor. That's why you've got it. Got it.
It's a source of some amusement. Some people tweet me and you go, "Hi, Doctor, Doctor." It's funny.
Excellent. Listen, thank you both again. This has been really great. Well, definitely one of my favourite hangouts, and hopefully we'll do it again soon. So thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.